You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. And this is day number 5 of Fall Pledge Drive here at WFHB. So we're asking you to call 812-323-1200 and pledge your support for Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported local news program.
Coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
The Bloomington Police Department provided fewer than 6 copies of body or dash camera footage to citizens during the 5 months before the city dramatically increased the cost of accessing the records. That is according to records that were just provided to WFHB this afternoon by the police department. WFHB requested information about body and dash camera footage after the city increased the fee to access the videos to $150 this summer. The previous fee had been $20 per video. In justifying the increase, city officials said money is needed to cover the cost of reviewing videos and redacting sensitive information. A new state law requires departments to redact certain information before the records can be released, including the images of minors and victims of sexual assault. But the records released today indicate that the city rarely releases body or dash cam footage anyway, at least in part because the videos are somewhat rarely requested. From March through July of this year, the Bloomington Police Department received only 15 requests from the public to view video footage. In at least 10 of those cases, police declined to release the footage or they indicated the videos did not exist. In 3 cases, it appears the citizen received copies of the videos. In 2 cases, the records don't indicate clearly what did happen. One thing is clear, requests dropped off entirely after the City Council voted to increase the fee to $150 in mid-July. Records provided by the city indicate that the police department received 0 requests to access video footage during the first month after the increase. Stay tuned to WFHB's Daily Local News for more detailed reports on the body camera issue in the coming days and weeks.
In a meeting last week, the Monroe County Election Board received assurances from voting machine vendor Hart InterCivic that their voting machines will allow the county to comply with recent reinterpretation of state law regarding straight party voting. Eddie Perez, Director of Product Management, said Hart InterCivic has been diligently testing its machines to make sure they comply.
The current issues at hand have to do with one specific subsection of law. It's Indiana Code 3-12-1-7, and it is only subsection F. And what I want to emphasize is that the issues that currently relate to that subsection, they were not, strictly speaking, the subject of the new legislation this year, which was Senate Enrolled Act 61. In fact, the present challenges that we are all working through stem from the fact that the Indiana Election Division's interpretation of that one subsection of law is not easily reconciled with the thrust of the new legislation, which was stated to be the protection of voter intent. As I mentioned, particularly given that we were participating throughout that process and given the focus on voter intent in Senate Enrolled Act 61, Hart was as surprised by the state's interpretation of subsection F as were many others in the election community in the state. And I do want to emphasize that we and others became aware of that interpretation about that particular subsection only after the legislation had been signed by the governor in March.
Perez emphasized the version of the system that will be used in the coming election has been used successfully in previous years. Board President Carolyn Vandeweel asked Perez to recap the reinterpretation of the law governing straight party voting that is causing clerks of court statewide to scramble.
In subsection F, which I have described, the state has interpreted subsection F to say the one circumstance where we want something different is if a voter has overvoted on the straight party selection. Okay? If a voter makes too many marks on the straight party selection, and if there are individual marks in any other partisan races, notwithstanding the fact that the state wants to count those individual marks in keeping with voter intent, in all of those other circumstances, in this one exceptional case, the state has interpreted the requirement to void all of the individual marks in all of the partisan races. And I would add, what was really striking is that even includes any individual marks in partisan at-large races, which the legislation just explicitly decoupled from straight party. So at the risk of sort of trying to oversimplify, those are that's the most comprehensive way I can describe it. I think for the voting public, I would simply say that in this one circumstance, again, to summarize, if a voter has made too many marks in a straight party vote, even if the voter's intent can be determined and they have not overvoted on the rest of the partisan marks, the interpretation is that none of those races can be counted.
Clerk of Court Nicole Brown said preserving voter intent is paramount. Perez affirmed that if a voting machine rejects a ballot due to overvoting, poll workers will offer voters a new paper ballot so they can start over.
We are just about halfway through WFHB's 2015 Spring Pledge Drive. Now is your chance to support independent local news here in South Central Indiana. Let's head back over to Pledge Central with News Director Joe Crawford.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, Sarah, for bringing us the daily local news today. We are asking folks to call in. The phone number is 812-323-1200. Again, 812-323-1200 to support the daily local news. Right now, we've got 20 minutes left in the show. We have a $180 goal. We do need to make these goals each and every show in order to ultimately keep WFHB going, keep WFHB thriving. You know, I want to talk very specifically about the DLN because it's such a huge endeavor here at WFHB. It's something that began with Chad Carruthers when he was really getting the news department going, and it's improved and kind of blossomed over many years. But if you just look at what we've done in the last few months, what the volunteers and staff here at WFHB have brought you on the DLN over the past few months. You know, we've questioned local officials about panhandling laws, about surveillance in the park, about disinfectant byproducts in the drinking water. We were the first folks to ever really talk about the increase in fees to access police body camera footage. We've brought detailed stories about the tech park, about the Chocolate Moose project, about a lot of big developments. The list goes on and on and on. My name is Joe. I guess I should have introduced myself. My name is Joe. I'm the news director here. Sarah, as the assistant news director, you're also very familiar with all of this programming and the diversity of programming that we have, and how, I mean, I think it's especially important in an election year.
It is especially important to me as a voter. I know I value a diverse palette of information, a variety of sources that I can educate myself on so that I can know the issues that are important to my community as well as the state and then the nation at large. And I think that, you know, WFHB provides such a variety of programming. In addition to the DLN, we offer a variety of programs in the morning, and then we offer public affairs programs in the evening that talk about, we have Blooming Out, we have Hola Latina, which is the only Spanish language talk show south of Indy. That's on Friday night. And with regard to the DLN, you said specifically, we do have a number of community volunteers who are working hard to report issues in the community and to find new angles to issues that have already been reported. But we need community support to be able to continue doing that.
And the way to do that is call us at 812-323-1200. 812-323-1200. Of course, you can also go to wfhb.org. You can always contribute safely and securely there. There is a big red donate button in the upper right side of the page. Worth noting that all of this is done on a razor-thin budget. If you look at the budgets of other radio enterprises or other newspapers, the amount of money that they need, that they have to have to pay reporters and to keep their whole operations going, is just monstrous in comparison to what we are able to do with the donations that we get from the community here at WFHB. So again, your money goes a very long way. If you've got a few dollars to spare today, I'm asking you to call 812-323-1200 to support WFHB's Daily Local News. Now, let's head back to Don and Sarah as they bring you the Daily Local News.
Members of the task force reviewing Bloomington's comprehensive master plan agree the 127-page draft document in its current form is little more than a marketing piece. Task force president Jack Baker agreed the document is long on narrative about Bloomington's selling points and said clearer policy statements still need to be developed.
Those policy statements then translate into an ordinance later on, but without good policy statements that are clear, easily read, understood, we can't get to a document that gives us guidance right down in the Plan Commission. And that's what we're talking about. We need guidance there. We need tools.
Speaking about land use, Task Force member Daryl Nayer said he would like the city to have a broader vision for areas on the edge of sites like the Beeline Trail and the Switchyard Park that have already been identified for development.
I mean, we talk about Walnut Street Corridor, but we end up, I believe it correctly, we stop at like Grimes. Is that correct within this? When the reality is, with the Switchyard Park, that entire corridor down well past, you could even make the argument that it needs to go past Tap Road and Winslow, are going to be dramatically impacted and should be included.
Nayer said not envisioning how growth will impact these boundary areas results in what he termed spot zoning decisions by the city. Nayer went on to say student housing should be its own standalone topic within the comp plan.
I know it's hard. Nobody wants it in their backyard. It's politically difficult to talk about. But we have to talk about it. And if it's not in this document, we are going to lose areas of the community that we want to protect because student housing will continue to develop like we're doing. And I think that that's unhealthy as a community.
Nayer said adding a map showing just how much property IU controls would give context to the planning challenges and constraints the city faces. Task Force members Nick Kappas and Carol Gullius agreed. Gullius said Bloomington should also factor the county's growth into its plans.
I was struck, as I was just talking to Nick, also by the lack of reference to Monroe County. I mean, we're surrounded by 400 square miles of county, and if we say compact urban form within this little donut hole and the county chooses to sprawl, then we don't have much warning, or we haven't done much planning.
Nayer related land use to housing affordability.
You got a county land use policy that is justifiably looking to discourage sprawl and development of a number of multiple housing units out in the county, and yet in the city itself we have limited opportunity for single family housing growth, and that tension creates a pressure on housing prices that are going to continue to climb. I mean, if there aren't opportunities for single-family housing, how do we manage that other than continue to watch property values go up, which as a homeowner, I'm okay. But for people who are looking for entry-level homes in our community, it becomes a real challenge.
Assistant Planning Director Josh Desmond said the city's goal is to begin the adoption process for the comp plan by the end of this calendar year. Gullius and other task force members see that goal as challenging, if not unrealistic. The city is still taking public comment on the comprehensive plan, which can be viewed online at bloomington.in.gov/CMP.
Carmel-based ITT Educational Services announced today that they would be ceasing all operations following a wave of sanctions from the Department of Education. ITT, which operates 137 campuses across 39 states, released a statement saying they would not be offering classes in September and that most of their 8,000 employees would be losing their jobs in the very near future. ITT had roughly 40,000 students enrolled and has several campuses in Indiana, including Merrillville, Newburgh, Fort Wayne, South Bend, and Indianapolis. The for-profit college has been under fire from the Department of Education for its over-reliance on federal aid money. It is under investigation by state attorneys for deceptive marketing practices and was recently the target of a Securities and Exchange Commission investigation for misleading shareholders about the state of their in-house student loan program. Executives allegedly manipulated the balance sheets to conceal the poor performance of the college's loans and the high rate of student default. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau also sued ITT for pressuring students into accepting those risky high-interest loans. Last week, the Department of Education issued sanctions against ITT that prohibited the company from enrolling new students who were dependent on federal loans. The company was also required to dramatically increase their cash on hand, a move intended to make sure the company would be able to compensate students in the event of a closure. The department also barred ITT from giving raises or bonuses to executives. Current or recent students may be eligible to have their federal loans discharged under a program designed to provide relief for students whose schools close suddenly. Students must contact their loan servicers to apply for discharge under the Closed Schools Program. ITT is the latest casualty in a series of closings following the Obama administration's renewed interest in investigating the practices of for-profit schools. Corinthian Colleges filed for bankruptcy in May following a federal investigation for misleading students with fake job placement statistics and artificially inflating tuition to max out student aid. The for-profit college industry surged during the 2000s by offering education to low-income and non-traditional students, but has declined recently under the strain of high tuitions, poor graduation rates, and job placement numbers, and scrutiny from governments and activists. A recent study from the National Bureau of Economic Research found that students at for-profit colleges were frequently left worse off than if they never attended in the first place. Only 32% of students graduated in 6 years, and those who dropped out were left saddled with debt and no new credentials. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. It's Fall Pledge Drive here at WFHB. Let's head back over to Pledge Central with News Director Joe Crawford.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Don. We are still a little bit short of our goal here for the Daily Local News. We need you to call 812-323-1200 to support the Daily Local News and to support our mission here at WFHB more generally. Which is, of course, to provide an open forum for the exchange and discussion of ideas and issues, as well as to celebrate and increase the local cultural diversity. Trying to do that with all of those things here with the Daily Local News each and every day. So many folks over the years have supported the Daily Local News, supported the efforts of our many volunteers, and we're asking you to do that today, especially if you've never done it before. I think it's one of those things that you don't maybe realize until you sort of invest in community radio that it generally feels pretty good to donate and to give money to a cause that you believe in. And local news, as much as it might seem like it's something that just should be there and you shouldn't really have to think about it, it takes a lot of work for folks to produce that. Here, if you think about even just that last story about ITT Tech, Jared Dill, one of our longest standing reporters and one of our most diligent reporters, spent a long time looking into that story today. It just broke today, but he did a lot of investigation into the background of ITT Tech, which is a a company that I remember hearing commercials about when I was a kid. But they have kind of fallen off the map in recent years. But there's a sort of a social justice angle behind that story that I think he did a really good job in pulling out. If you want to support that kind of reporting, it's not easy, but we want to do it, and we want you to help us do it by calling 812-323-1200. Again, it's 812-323-1200 to support the Daily Local News here on WFHB. Just a few minutes left, and it really means a lot when you call, because we need to hear from you. We need to know what you like about our programming, and the way to do that is call 812-323-1200. Let's continue the Daily Local News now with WFHB's financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is. Hello, and welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Christina with the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It seems like every day we hear another story about a data breach or hack at a company and the resulting leak of customers' personal information. Whether or not your personal information was compromised in the breaches reported at Target, Home Depot, or Anthem, or the most recent theft of 5.6 million fingerprint files from the Office of Personnel Management, it's difficult to be a member of society and not be affected by this issue. It can also feel pretty overwhelming when you receive that letter in the mail or that call from your bank about what you need to do to protect yourself. So we are going to devote 3 episodes about how you can do that. Today, kick some bad habits in order to protect your identity. 1. Carry everything in your wallet or purse. Seems logical, right? You think carrying everything with you allows you to be prepared for any circumstance, but it may not be the safest habit. If you don't use all of the cards in your wallet, it is a good idea to keep some of them at home. And never keep account numbers, think deposit slips or blank checks, or passwords in your wallet. It is a good idea to create a wallet inventory in an encrypted file on your computer or a piece of paper in a secure place. This inventory has the name, account number, and authorized users and theft reporting numbers for all of your cards. That way, if you lose your wallet, you'll easily know which cards are missing and can report them lost immediately. 2. Not being vigilant with your passwords. Passwords. Every website and transaction requires a unique one. How is one supposed to keep up? A study in 2012 by the government of Norway said that the average minimum number of private passwords that a person had was 17, but that 65% of Norwegian workers use the same password for more than one application. How many passwords do each of us use on a regular basis? 100 or 1, with variations? How often do you change your passwords? How often are your passwords pets' names or children's toys? Here are some things to keep in mind when it comes to keeping your passwords safe. The U.S. CERT, or United States Computer Emergency Readiness Team, suggests that passwords be changed frequently, at least every few months, and that the same password not be used for every account. Don't use easy-to-guess passwords. Remember that the top 5 passwords were variations of password, 123456, and QWERTY. Also, avoid using any information you may share over social media, pets' names, kids' names, and maiden names, for example, to prevent identity thieves from easily guessing your password. This also includes answers to security questions. But how do you keep track of different passwords from every account? U.S. CERT suggests that you keep track of your passwords in an encrypted file on your computer and make sure to back it up. If you want to keep your passwords in a physical form, like a note card, box, or a notebook, make sure to keep them in a secure location. Also, when you create your passwords, you need to make them sufficiently long and complex. This is because hackers can use mathematical equations to pre-compute possible passwords if the passwords are short enough. If your password is longer than 14 characters, it's very difficult to pre-compute, and even better are passwords that are 20 characters long. In those cases, they become computationally ineffective and take too long to crack. It is even more difficult if you don't use words in your password at all, but instead choose random alphanumeric combinations. 3. Leaving your phone or computer unlocked. All of your efforts to keep your passwords a secret can be for naught if you lose a phone, tablet, or computer without an entry password on it. Most of us use keychains or password aids on internet browsers to store sensitive information such as passwords and credit card numbers, so always put a password on the device itself. 4. Throw away sensitive documents. Can't imagine anyone looking through your trash? No one can, until it happens to them or someone they know. Make sure to shred all documents that contain any personal information about you. If you don't have a shredder, look around town for Community Shred Days, where you can bring all your documents and for a small donation, they will shred them for you. Stay tuned for next week's The Ins and Outs of Money, where we discuss positive steps that you can take to help protect yourself from identity theft.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacy at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producers Joe Crawford and Dan Witherid is our sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library, .info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Jared Dill, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacy with help from Christina Wiltsey as part of the It's Your Money project at the Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Ron Schoon. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.